Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Listen to them. Children of the night. What music, Dave.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
You wouldn't be able to do these awful things to me if I weren't still in this chair.
But you are, Blanche. You are in that chair.
Who's in the box?
Put the gun down, David.
No, what's in the box?
Not
till
you give me the
what's
gun.
In the box?
Wolves have a territorial range of about 300 miles and a kill range of 30. If we're close to their den, and if we're within that radius, then they'll come after us.
How can we tell if we're close?
We can't.
What in God's name are you talking about?
Your son, Mr. Thorne. The son of the devil.
They're insane.
He must die, Mr. Thorne!
You do not want to go that way.
What's that way?
Officer, sir, you do not want to go that way. We're going to the mall.
Hello, Dexter Morgan.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I'm one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how are you, sir?
I am well.
And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you?
I feel like I want to smash something with a ball peen hammer.
Fair enough. And, go ahead.
As long as it's not my knee, Mike.
And in the Commonwealth of Virginia?
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, how are you?
Good.
All right, sounds good. So, who are we?
Did you just call Barrett the scum of Virginia?
No, Commonwealth of Virginia.
Oh, okay.
I said in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
All right.
Yeah. All right. So, who are we? We are the Dark Discussions podcast, which is www.darkdiscussions.com. We are a website that focuses on a lot of stuff, specifically genre movies. So, Dark Discussions podcast does horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, art house, midnight movies, foreign language films, cult films, drive-in theater, and the like. Basically, we try to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. We also have an email, darkdiscussions@aol.com. You can email us that way and just put in the subject DDP and then whatever your subject is. The reason we want the DDP in the subject line is because then we can search our inbox and find your emails, because they do get mixed in with all the marketing material that we get from dozens and dozens and dozens of companies that send us marketing materials, notices, screeners, and the like. And we will read your email on the podcast. We do have a Facebook group called Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, where you can join in the topics and start your own. And we do have the website, as we mentioned, www.darkdiscussions.com. And Eric, what else can people find on that website?
Well, they can find a link to our Patreon account. Patreon allows you to contribute financially to your online artists, like podcasters. Producing the show is not free. We have to pay for things like computer equipment and web domain names and website hosting and movie tickets and so on and so forth. So if you'd like to help offset the cost of producing this show, that's how you can go it. You can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions or click on the Patreon badge at darkdiscussions.com. It's on every page. We greatly appreciate any and all contributions.
Indeed, indeed. And we do have the interesting aspect of recording this today on February 29th, 2024, Leap Day, for some of our listeners.
2024 is a leap year.
This is thank
you, know
Siri.
You're right.
Thank you, Siri. Thank you. But either way, what we got is some of our listeners, like Pam, are always curious when we record our episodes, because sometimes those episodes aren't released immediately, because we do always sometimes put some of the VOD releases in the queue to be released later just in case we're on vacation or we're sick or something comes up that happens, like storms that blow out power or whatever. But we'll always have an episode ready to release each week, so we have a few in the queue. Though this one probably will be released pretty quick, probably in 2 weeks from now, because we have a Korean film coming out next week, and then this one will probably be the one after. But either way, that's our date, Leap Day 2024, February 29th. All right, so that's pretty much our house cleaning to begin our episode. So I guess we can get into our topic tonight. So, Eric, what are we going to discuss tonight?
Tonight we're talking about a new movie. Apparently, this has a limited theatrical release. I was unaware of it. It's not showing anywhere near me. But it's also available to buy or rent digitally. We're looking at a movie called Monolith.
I want to tell you a story. All you have to do is listen. I've gone back to Mom and Dad's for a bit. I thought coming back here would help.
Maybe you need a break.
I don't need a break. I need a story. But I am stuck. I need your help, listeners. An anonymous email. An object filled with unknowable power. Is there anyone out there that knows anything about these bricks?
When I listened to your podcast, I thought, that's that damn rock. And the visions that really get me. It feels violent.
My grandfather has changed. Replaced with something else. Stop, stop, stop.
Hello?
Before I received my brick, I had a very strange vision.
How do you know if you're having these visions?
The bricks have really got under your skin, haven't they?
Some kind of sick joke.
You need to be careful.
Something awful is coming.
I listened to the new episode. You sounded kind of messed up.
It is spreading like a disease. Any of us could be next.
I want to tell you a story. All you have to do is listen.
That's right. Monolith is a brand new movie that came out in the United States on February 16th, 2024. However, it did have production date and release dates all the way back into 2022, most likely in Australia and festivals. The film stars what's her name again? Lily Sullivan. Lily Sullivan, who probably is best known for Evil Dead Rise that just came out last year, 2023. The film is directed by Matt Vesely and written by Lucy Campbell. The film is a Wellgo USA Entertainment, which releases actually a lot of Korean films as well. The film is getting fairly decent reviews from critics, but mediocre reviews from audiences. There's a difference of 30% between audiences and reviewers. It did get 45 reviews, so it has been noticed, 87%, while only 59% for audiences. That's pretty much all I got for the background of the film. So I guess we can get into how we heard about this film and what we thought about this film. And so let's start with co-host Eric, because Eric did bring this film up to our attention.
Yeah, I just ran across this movie while I was scanning the services, as I do on a weekly basis. I saw that it starred Lily Sullivan, who I really, really liked in Evil Dead Rise. And It also shows you that the main character is a podcaster, so you know it's going to be awesome. no, but it looked like something I might be into. I understand why there's a split between critics and audiences, because this is really just one person in a room. She's doing research. She's talking to people. She's interviewing people for their podcast. She's talking to people on the phone. But it's really Lily Sullivan in a room, and not everybody's into that kind of movie, and I get it. But watching people have conversations is my idea of a good time. So I really like this movie. So I'm curious to see what everybody else thought. There could be some interesting takes on what exactly happened in this movie. So I'm eager to talk about it.
All right, sounds good. Co-host Mike, what do you got?
All right, so I'm going to be straight up. I watched this movie in about the worst mindset possible. I finished watching it about 5 minutes after we started the podcast. I literally just finished watching it a couple minutes ago. That said, I think it's an interesting film. There's a lot I like about the film, and I'm not sure it's a film. It feels more like a narrative podcast, you know, like the radio shows they do for podcasts, because so much of this is really just through spoken dialogue. With very few things, you could almost get away with this being an audio recording and not something visual. The opening scene immediately gave me Skinamarink vibes, because you're just hearing talking while staring at an object like that's right in your face. I was like, uh-oh. But I thought it was interesting. The performance is good. I think the story, the narrative is interesting. If you're not into the story, there's no explosions. There's no like CGI monsters. There's nothing. There's no blood and gore. There's really nothing that's going to hold your interest if you're not into the story, because the story is the thing entirely. And then you're going to get to the ending. And there's, I think, a fairly significant chance that you're going to get to the ending and say, what the fuck? And if that is going to be the kind of thing that sends you into a rage, then don't watch this movie. But if you don't like those kind of movies, this is the kind of movie you're going to want to watch. So I'm definitely leaning towards liking it. I'm thinking I'm digesting what the ending means, kind of, sort of. I don't know if I liked the final ending. I don't know if I liked it overall, but I certainly would have trouble recommending it to just blanket anybody. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting endeavor.
All right, sounds good. Barrett, what do you got?
Yeah, I like this film generally. I think the story is well told. It's interesting. It kept me interested through the whole movie. I still haven't decided how much I like this movie. I'm still thinking about the end, and maybe this discussion will kind of help me decide what I ultimately feel about it. I think it's going to help to discuss it, because it is a little vague, I guess the word is. So I'm interested to see what everybody else thought and what they thought was going on, et cetera.
All right, sounds good. Yeah, I heard about this film from Eric, and I watched it, I think, on Monday night, or maybe it was Tuesday or Sunday night. It was one of the two nights, because I wanted to do it because I went on vacation pretty close to the Quebec border in the White Mountains in New Hampshire the past 3 days, and just got home a couple hours ago. So I watched it then. I absolutely agree with Mike about I felt it was more of an audio radio show, except for a handful of scenes where you're looking at an email or expression of someone's face or something. But that was a good description because I felt the same thing. As a story, I felt it was the first 10 minutes or so I was horrified too, as Mike was. I thought it was going to be an absolutely horrible film. And I completely disliked the ending. But generally in between those the last 10 minutes and the first 10 minutes, the film was solid enough. The character isn't necessarily likable. I did read some reviews, and you can see them right on Wikipedia, how the character is a dubious person ethically and as a journalist, and the claustrophobia lies, a cunning puncturing of privilege, and clear-eyed critique of the way we construct, manipulate, and ultimately consume truth. Things like that. So I didn't really like the character that much. And she had a dubious past even before the film started. I felt that the character's motivations were – well, that's just related, I guess, to the character herself. It was good enough. It was good enough, I feel. There was something else I wanted to say, but I can't even remember. But I'm sure I'll bring it up or think of it as we get into our discussion. All right, so that's our thoughts on the film. So I guess we can get into the wiki, Eric.
Wiki. Oh, Jesus. Sorry, I lost my tab. All right. A headstrong journalist whose investigative podcast uncovers a strange artifact, an alien conspiracy, and the lies at the heart of her own story.
All right. Sounds good. That's good enough, I guess. It doesn't say too much. Doesn't tell you if it's science fiction or horror or private detective procedural or anything. So I guess that's good.
This is a private detective story.
Yeah. Well, kind of. Kind of more. What she's doing is what I guess a journalist should do, right? Go around calling.
I mean, it's investigative journalism, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, exactly. All right, so what we do here on the Dark Discussions podcast, basically we give our review as we just did, but then after that we generally talk about the film itself, and there's two aspects to that. The first is we talk about general things that aren't spoilery. Things related to the film, these type of films, bottle films, one person, whatever, Australian cinema, whatever, anything kind of that's not spoilery. And then at a certain point, we'll throw up the spoiler alert and talk about everything and anything related to the film, including the ending and specific scenes and whatnot. But you'll be notified when we do throw up the spoiler alert. That's pretty much it. So I guess we can get into the general stuff. I did just remember what I wanted to say during my review, which is I felt the story, oddly, was more interesting when I felt she was an unreliable narrator than what turns out to possibly be the truth at the end. Even though I get why they went that way and the interesting aspect of that. But I felt the last part of the film didn't fit as well with the unreliable narrative that I thought they were going to. And that's interesting because I'm been sick of, and I said that in our review of the film that we just released an episode today on, Somewhere Quiet, about unreliable narrators and how they do it too much, and I'm kind of getting bored of that. But oddly, this one I kind of liked because I didn't like the character, and so as an unreliable narrator, I was getting into it.
I don't know if unreliable narrator is the right word. I think manipulative narrator might be the right.
Well, that's the thing. That's what it was. It wasn't an unreliable narrator after all, when I thought it was going that way. But that's an excellent. Correction, Eric, because
this is going to be weird, and I might be the only reason I was thinking of this is because it was mentioned on brought up on a horror etc. episode recently, and part of me was thinking the Babadook, which had a physical object, right? The book, the Babadook. And there is an explanation, if you look, for where the book comes from, if you want to go with the unreliable narrator, it was all in their head kind of thing. I don't think that works here because there's so many people involved in this. I don't know that it could be that, right? It feels weird.
Well, and I thought that was part of the what worked with this movie is that there are so many people involved with this and we're just in the room with the one.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, also I kept on thinking though, a lot of times when she, how many people did she really talk to? It was maybe like six or something like that, not including her friends and family. And
well, you hear direct conversations with only a few of them, but you also see her email box blowing up with dozens and dozens of emails.
Well, but this is where I was going, was the people that she talked to, like the woman in Ohio, USA, as well as whatever emails that popped up, they're kooks. I just consider them all kooks, every one of them. I go, oh, this is just another kook. And I don't know. Again, I don't believe in supernatural and all that crap anyway. So I'm always.
But Phil, these are not documentaries, so that they can have supernatural things happening in their world because they're not in your world.
Right. It's a movie, right? But the movie wasn't showing us anything that was necessarily true or not. It wasn't like the Mothman prophecies where, you know, he knocks on the door and the guy says, pulls out the gun and says, why are you coming back? And he goes, what do you mean coming back? You were here last night at midnight and now you're here again. And he goes, I don't know what you're talking about. And things like that. And that movie built it up where, okay, this is the world they're in and there is supernatural or alien stuff going on. Here, you know, this is just emails and interviews. And a lot of cases, again, this movie does have all that supernatural and space stuff. It could have it. You're absolutely right, Mike. But based off of how it was worked or the premise, the way they did the film, it made me just think that, okay, and I was thinking that this woman was maybe kooky herself. I just kept on thinking, okay, these are just kooks, every one of them. So that's just how I was feeling as the film was going. And then when the big reveal happens at the end, I guess shattered in my belief, because I was like, okay, the whole first hour and 15 minutes, I was just looking at this woman as kooky and all the people she's talking to, besides her friends, as being kooks as well. Because again, the people she's talking to are eccentric people anyway. They're not like, the people that she is talking to that aren't directly involved, like her friends and even her father, who just sold something, were fairly normal, and you could tell they're not eccentric. But the woman from Ohio and Claus and stuff, I just felt they were all eccentric and maybe just, you know, kooks. But that's how I felt until the reveal, obviously. And
well, the thing is, there's one shot in the film. I'm like I said, I was really distracted while trying to watch this. So there may be more that I missed. There's a shot in the film that is coming from a, I would say, as a film viewer, a neutral perspective.
Right? Yeah, you're talking about the sky, right?
Yeah, in the sky. There's something that happens at the end of the film that you could very much say is from her perspective. Or it doesn't have to be, but it could be because she's there on screen. So if she's seeing it, we may be seeing it through her eyes. And so that might not have happened. It also might have. But the thing that's shown, like looking at the sky over her house, that doesn't work if this is intended to be unreliable character, a character suffering from delusions.
Right.
But then that opens up a Pandora's box of questions that she's just crazy would have answered just nicely. And this box that you open, that something is really going on, there's no real answers to. So
Right. And we'll get into those questions later after the spoiler flag.
And by the way, I should say, if it's a horror film, not having answers is unsettling. They maybe don't have to have the answers, and I and often have said you don't necessarily always have to have the answers, but there's a difference in not having any answers and being confused.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, we never found out where the graboids came from. We don't need that answer. That doesn't mean we're confused as to what happened in the film.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Phil, you were talking about how you thought that everybody she was talking to was a kook, but the very nature of the subject matter of what she's investigating leads to that, right? Like, if you were investigating Bigfoot, right, and you start interviewing people who say they've seen Bigfoot, like,
exactly, yeah, that's my point.
Some of them are going to be kooks, but when you're talking to the one who's actually saw Bigfoot, are you going to know the difference?
Right.
But, well,
just a reminder, send emails to Eric.
Right. But that's my point, is that the person that did see Bigfoot is a kook as well, in my opinion. Because Bigfoot doesn't exist.
But does it matter if they saw Bigfoot?
Well, it matters in the sense that if there was no supernatural involved, it just means that I'm doing a podcast on cryptozoology or space abductions or whatever. But I know it's all a crock. Just like, you know, these ghost hunter shows, they never show us anything, and it's all a crock. But it's fun. And the people who believe it, in my opinion, and I don't mean to be rude to folks who may believe some of this stuff, but they're kooks. And so when she's talking to all these people, I feel that I'm not even sure if she really believes anything about it for a while anyway.
She doesn't. I think you're exactly right. She doesn't.
Until a certain point when, you know, they do the x-ray of the things. But again, even that doesn't mean that it's supernatural because – you know,
but it means it's fucking weird.
It is weird.
And she's
people love and doing shit.
Could
like
be
that.
Science fiction. It doesn't have to be supernatural either.
When I say supernatural, I'm throwing in science fiction too. But that's fair.
But this is. I mean, I don't know how many of you. I never listened to Alex Jones.
I have not really.
But I've heard episodes many years ago. I had heard episodes of Art Bell when I worked.
I don't even know who that is.
When I worked for Bear Mountain, and there were nights I was stuck, like, and there weren't many radio receptions I could get because they didn't have a TV. Art Bell was a guy. I don't know if he's still alive, but he had a radio show at least in the 80s and 90s, and probably the 2000s, and he would do all this Bigfoot alien stuff.
Okay.
And
he passed away, it says here. I'm looking him up.
Okay, not for a moment, I want to be clear, not for a moment did I take any of what was going on seriously. I have no idea if Art Bell believed what was doing was seriously. But he had some of the most wackadoodle, that's a look up in the medical journals, it is a diagnosis, wackadoodle callers and guests. And he would have on, like, if on Monday he'd have on a caller talking about Bigfoot and aliens, and then you'd have somebody else talking about Atlantis, and they'd be like, all that makes sense. And the stuff, and somehow they're talking about things, they would actually talk about things that completely contradicted the guest the night before about, I don't know, the creation of the Earth or whether or not we landed on the moon or any of this. And they would just buy all of it, even though they were inherently contradictory to each other. There's some weird people out there who believe weird shit, and some of them are like normal people that you don't know because they don't talk about their weird shit to other people. But when you give them an avenue to talk about their weird shit, it just that's where it comes out, right? And so yeah, she's going to solicit, like we see. Her podcast is blowing up, and she gets tons and tons of emails, most of which we never see her react or respond to.
Well, and also, I think it's made clear that this character has motivation to make this a success. She's in a bad place, her reputation is not good at this point in time, and she needs a hit. And I think some of the questionable behavior we see her engage in is partially due to the fact that she is desperate to try to get something on track because her life is pretty much a disaster.
Yeah, this is Todd Phillips basically throwing up his hands and saying, fuck it, I'll make a Joker movie. right, just give people what they want.
Well, I don't know about that. I think he just wanted to – that. I don't think that's a good analogy, but I see where you're going, Mike.
He couldn't get anything made that he wanted to get made, and so he just finally threw up his hands and said, I'll do a superhero movie then. Fine. I'll make the movie I want, but I'll do it with the superhero.
Fair enough. This woman here, I think she is probably going to hurt. If this was all fake, which the movie may show that it isn't, but generally people who talk about stuff like this, you know, Bigfoot, space aliens, all and vampires or whatever, you know, ghosts, whatever, it's all crap, at least in my opinion. And she is going away from real journalism to, the Elvis had a space baby, you know, that we would see at the checkout counter, those type of magazines that used to be there before magazines disappeared. And
does anybody remember the title of her podcast in this movie?
No.
Because it was really great. It was like the unbelievable or something along those lines. It's very clear
It's beyond me. Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, you see it, it's like you know that it's going to have, like, a light, like, you see that, like, the logo would be a title, and there'd be a light coming down from the heavens with the UFO above it, like, just illustrating it. Like, that's clearly meant to be an X-Files sort of appeal, title like that.
Right.
You don't do Beyond Believable for something where you're talking about investigating corruption in City Hall.
Or the stock market.
Right, because all that stuff is true. That is believable. but that's a fair point, Mike. Yeah. So obviously she's decided to go that route in podcasting. But again, you know, to be honest, unless she's a really famous person, which I wasn't sure how famous she is or isn't.
She's gotten money. That house, man.
No. She comes from wealth. Her parents are filthy rich. There's no doubt. We learned that right pretty close. And that house, just looking at the house before we even find that out, shows that thing she comes from wealth. But when she her fame, I mean, people talk about this type of crap all the time on podcasts. You can just search – you know, Spotify or Apple Podcasts.
Crap, I think you mean interesting subject material.
No, I'm talking about cryptozoologies. I mean, again, they're all fun.
Interesting subject material.
Okay, if you
stuff
you
people want to listen to.
Yeah, if you guys think that is interesting subject material, that's fine. So those type of podcasts exist all over the place, and you know, you have everybody in their basement doing it. So it's not like again, this podcast blowing up was as made me laugh as much as the podcasters in that Kevin Smith movie about the walrus. Because podcasting, there's only so many podcasts, and a lot of the podcasts that have the huge numbers are already famous people that decide to have podcasts. A lot of them, and even some of them, don't even draw in that many. I mean,
Howie Mandel, in the context of this movie, it seems as if this woman is pretty well known. Like, she's been involved in a big public scandal. So even if her reputation isn't great at this point in time, her name is known. So I believe that the podcast could blow up.
All right, that's fair. Yeah, if she has a name, it could possibly blow up, especially someone that has that is questionable as a person. People like those type of stuff. You know, I mean, if some jerk sports figure has a podcast, people are going to listen to it. You know, if Michael Vick had a podcast, I bet you people would listen to the Michael Vick show.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, right.
But let's remember the world we're in right now, which is that the market is so fractured, it doesn't take much to get a quote-unquote big audience relative to everybody else to just be successful. Right? Whereas that's a reason why you get something like Grey's Anatomy going on for 20 years. It may not get the numbers that it used to get, but it's still going to get better numbers than a lot of other things. So fuck it, keep it going.
We're starting to get into minutiae, so let's let's wrap up our general portion of this review and get into the spoiler territory so we can really get into this. I just want to say before we get into spoilers that I think Lily Sullivan's performance in this movie is fantastic, because really this movie doesn't work at all unless you're in there with her. And I think she pulled it off. Like, she carried this movie on her shoulders, because her performance wasn't compelling, it would just be a piece of crap.
She has absolutely no choice.
Yeah, I mean, it is a one-person radio show.
In the film.
Yeah, but except voices, a lot of voices, obviously. I will say that she was fabulous and fantastic, but I do have to say that the role was hard because of the focus on her dialogue and her. But I also have to say that it wasn't many camera angles that had to make the performance good anyway. So, like you said, Mike, she could have just been in a radio booth, doing it as a radio play, and it would have been pretty solid all the same. But I just want to put it that way. So, you know, we've seen a lot of good roles of people that have to do a lot more than what she has to do, even if she has to carry this film for the fact that she's the only person on screen. So
I'm going to give a lot of credit to the director, the cinematographer, the editor. And for a movie with this budget, who knows, it might all be the same person. It's not going to be easy to make that interesting to watch.
Right.
And I'm not saying that I'm watching going, ooh, that's a fascinating camera angle, or look at the company. I wasn't bored watching it.
Right.
Is basically all I mean. And just viewing that when you don't have a car chase.
Right.
You don't have somebody like she's dressed up in glamorous costumes or song and some dance numbers. Just a person looking at email and wandering around their home for the most part. Not easy to do that. And they deserve a lot of credit for that, even though it's not the kind of film. This isn't like, you know, Dances with Wolves. And you got this big vista and landscape, and people are all go, oh, that was a pretty movie. Good cinematography. No, this is a movie that's got nothing, and it's still not dull, and that's hard to do.
Right. I mean, it's not an Anatomy of a Fall or the one that film you saw, Mike, with Emma Stone. Exactly. The poor things. Yeah. I agree with you, Mike. I want to focus more on the people who made the film, even more so than Lily Sullivan, because what they did to take what is basically seven voices, including one that's on screen, and make it interesting enough. So the screenwriter, the director, the cinematographer, the editor, all those people, I feel, made the film what it is, even more so than Lily Sullivan, though Lily Sullivan was excellent in the film all the same.
No, everybody who made the film deserves credit. But again, I'll reiterate that if Lily Sullivan's performance doesn't work, the movie doesn't work.
And that's fair. Yeah, I would concur. I mean, yeah. Let's see. Anything else that's non-spoiler that people would want to bring up?
Yeah, and I want to know how much that house cost.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
I think this, I want to say, I think really? I think this movie did a really good job on mood and just feeling. Just, I think that was really important in making me want to continue to watch it. I felt dread almost all the time through it.
Yeah, the sound design helped with that too.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, so I guess at this point we'll throw up the spoiler alert. So at this point we'll talk about everything and anything related to the film. The film, as of February 29th, 2024, is available for rental or VOD purchase wherever you do your rental or VOD purchases. So at this point in time, as the podcast is made and released, that's what you can do. So, yeah, I guess we can let people know that they can go buy or watch it. And otherwise, we're here to talk about everything and anything. So, spoiler alert is up. So, what are we going to talk about?
All right. Well, eventually, I want to have a conversation about who put this whole thing in motion. Because this whole story is started by our main character getting an email,
anonymous,
for her to for her to call this woman. So who sent the email? And there are a couple other events in the movie too that move things forward, like a package gets delivered. So it's like, who's doing that? So it's interesting.
I agree.
So, and for part of the movie, I mean, I totally agree with you, Phil, that for part of the movie, you're not sure if she's losing it or whatever. But there are physical manifestations. There's the, you know, a thumb drive shows up at her doorstep. That can't be, you know, dismissed by she's hallucinating, right?
Email
with a phone number to call that woman. That happened.
Oh, when I said unreliable, I don't mean that she's insane in the sense that she is imagining things like cluster A personalities would. What I meant was she's a liar and she has been stretching the truth in journalism, things like that, and just picking this story to do is hilariously funny for someone that is supposed to be a serious journalist. So I meant that way. And then when we find out that she had these flashbacks and forgot so many things as a child, whether it was disassociation or just things she didn't want to remember and completely forgot because of it, because the mind can, as a child to an adult, can do that to people sometimes.
Or then, she just doesn't remember back that far, because not everyone remembers that part of their life.
Yeah, but that is hard to believe, because she was, based off the video on the drive that was sent to her, she was older than my daughter's. And older than memories that I can remember. So, and the memories that occurred are things that are kind of hard to forget based off of damage to the table.
There could be other influences.
The older I get, the less I remember. I mean,
well, a black bar, and you forget that, and then you just have a story that you're looking up, that, you know, and then. The table being
damaged. I don't find that to be unbelievable in the movie, Phil.
I'm sorry?
I don't find that to be unbelievable in the least. You've never had your parents tell you something about when you were a kid and be like, I don't remember that.
Are you going to tell me you remember, you can recall all the presents you got for your 9th birthday?
Right. There are some people that can, and maybe you're one of those, but I am not.
Well, she forgets she forgets the woman that worked for her parents. That was weird. And forgets about the brick that was a big aspect of that time period. She remembers the birthday when she sees the video.
I thought she remembered the woman. She just didn't know that woman's name, so she had no connection there. She didn't realize that that was the same person. I mean, she's not going to remember the woman's name that was their servant when she was that age.
I don't know. I mean, it depends on how the close the servant was. I mean, she was at the birthday party taking photographs, so I don't know. But, I mean, yeah, maybe you guys are right. I cordially disagree.
That's why people, you know, saying they saw someone in a court case, it's not reliable. People's memories are not reliable at all.
But I can tell you when I was young, I was like a year younger. So she just turned 9. I think I was been about 8. My father's mother, my paternal grandmother came to stay with us because she had cancer. She wasn't going to stay very long, shall we say. I remember that she stayed with us. I remember very little of that experience. What happened, what she did, what we did. I don't remember much in terms of her personality, right? It's a very hazy memory. In this case, the specific thing, she did something bad as a kid. I think that's a repressed memory that she doesn't want to have to deal with it, because I'm sure she feels guilty over everything that came as a consequence of her action. And that black bar, as we find, or black box, whatever,
Brick.
Probably didn't hang around long because he found it, thought it was a gift, but Dad apparently very quickly sold it.
Well, I think we need to rewind a little bit just in case, for some reason, the listeners are in the spoiler section, even though they haven't seen the movie. Which I don't advise. You should always watch the movie first. But basically the way this whole thing kicks off is that we at the beginning of the movie become aware that she is a journalist who's involved in a scandal because she did not fact check her source. She went public saying that somebody was guilty of crimes without having fully investigated the source of the information that told her that this person was guilty. And so she's been involved in a defamation lawsuit. And her reputation is rubbish because of this right now. So she gets this email from someone. Did it even say who it was from?
It was anonymous, it said.
Anonymous. So she gets an anonymous email telling her to call this woman at this number. And I think it said to ask her about the black brick.
That's correct.
So she calls this woman and asks her about the black brick. And she talks about how when she was a kid, her parents worked for this family. Or was it her that worked for the family? She worked for the family. And this black brick showed up. And it was hers. And the family she worked for took it because one day they came home and found the bunch of the furniture in the home had been damaged severely. And they blamed the daughter of the servant. And the servant really didn't have any money to pay for anything. So they took this brick, this black brick that she had found, and sold it to an art collector as a way of recompense. So they fired her and her daughter. They had been sending to music school, and they stopped paying for that. And got rid of them and sold the brick to get money to get something back for damaging their furniture. And that's how this whole thing starts, is with her getting this email tipping her off to call this woman. And that's the
brick we're talking about. It was an irreplaceable piece of furniture.
Right. It was a family heirloom that may have been made by the great 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 grandfather or something like that, and things of that nature. And we do learn later too.
It was that, a piece of wood with four legs.
Actually, it's worth as much as you feel it's worth, and how much you can sell it for. So either way, the point is that we do find out later that the story from the woman owned Brick and was the housekeeper or whatever may have only told half the story, because the other half of the story we learned from our podcaster's father, because that's one of the big twists, is we find out that the woman worked for her family, which is that the daughter that they were sending to music school had violent fits and stuff too. So, but the main point of the whole twist isn't even whether or not who was guilty and who wasn't guilty. The main twist was our podcaster, being a dumb 9-year-old girl, did all the damage and blamed the housekeeper and the housekeeper's kid for it.
Yes.
And so that's the big twist. No matter if the housekeeper's daughter was a crazy person, and no matter what the damage was, we just know that it happened. It did happen, and the only witness to it was our podcaster. And being a 9-year-old girl, she was a little evil stinker.
Well, and I'm also not entirely sure that the housekeeper's daughter actually did have violent fits. I think that's something that was in the father's mind because of the damage that happened to the furniture.
That could be true, but also I could see how once they're blamed for it and they're not the guilty party, they could have violent fits as well, because you get pissed and you start flipping out, using profanities. Maybe they threw stuff. Who knows? But all in all, all in all, actions cause reactions. So if you do something like lie, the people who get blamed can get angry because you lied. And so
I thought this was all part of the father's narrative, right? The father has concocted this story. Some of it's true. A lot of it, I think, is shading for his convenience to make him look better.
Right, and that's why I say transference. He was basically taking what his daughter was doing and putting it on that woman's daughter. So she was maybe having the violent fits.
That's a good question. I don't know. I took the father's word for it, but he found out later on his own, figuring out things, that maybe his daughter was the guilty party. And that's why he kept on saying, let's not bring up things that happened years ago. But you could be right. It could be anything. It could have been
They wanted the black bar, which he claimed was theirs anyway because it was found on their property. So it's all convenient. You know, they might have known she did it, and they just blamed them anyway because they wanted the black bar.
Well, I don't think that's the case. I think the daughter truly did throw the housekeeper and her daughter under the bus.
And absolutely.
And I think the father and probably the mother too believe the daughter. Why would, you know, but all in
I'm
all,
not sure.
Well, they didn't need the brick, and they didn't need to blame the
they wanted more money. Why? What do you mean by need?
I don't see that, Phil, but okay.
I think this is an important part of the story, because I think that it shows that you're absolutely correct about our main character here. She's dishonest to a certain extent, but she comes by it honestly. She gets it from her dad, because her dad has this whole story in his head, and some of the events are true. Their furniture did get destroyed, but because his daughter threw the housekeeper's daughter under the bus, he then embellished that in his head, like having seen the furniture destroyed. Now part of the story he has in his head is that the housekeeper's daughter had these violent fits. And I don't think he ever saw her have a violent fit. I think he said that because of what happened in the furniture, and he wanted to believe his daughter.
Well, and if she was a good person, she wouldn't have deleted the recording later on either.
I actually I think that was a good person by deleting the recording, because the thing is she – well, oh, actually, I see what you're saying. I'll go with you with this on Barrett. She's the guilty party, so I think it was good that she deleted her father's thing because there's no reason to drag her parents into it when it was her that did all the damage and caused the whole thing from happening.
But the daughter of the housekeeper wanted her to tell the truth, and by deleting that, there was no more proof of anything.
But she could. She could just call them back and say, yeah, I lied. See, the father doesn't have to be involved at all. My father was just reacted from a reaction.
I do have a question about the series of events, which is that when she puts two and two together, it's because she sees the symbol carved on the table she's sitting at. Now, is that the table in question, or is that just the table in her house that she did that to again?
I think it's the table in question. If she did it again, then she's truly an unreliable narrator.
Because I couldn't tell whether she was just shocked that it was there or that it was the symbol from the scan of the brick.
I think she was looking underneath the dolly to see if the damage was there. It was this table that and when she saw that what the damage was, that was what shocked her.
Okay.
Because it all kind of came clear to her at that point, right?
Right.
She started having memories of what happened.
And also, she's now seeing this black brick conspiracy, because why would she have drawn that symbol instead of just any symbol? You know, most people would have just wrote like "fuck you" or a smiley face or just scratches, you know, because you can't. It's hard to do it when you're that small. But she drew this science fiction symbol that's related to the brick that she supposedly shouldn't have even known about because it was inside the brick, not outside the brick. So that was what I think scared her more than anything. Never mind, like you said, Barrett, all the memories are now flooding back as well. And plus,
that's totally plausible. I was just unclear.
Yeah. Mike, your thoughts on all this? Simon, you're still there.
I'm a little occupied. I'll be with you in a minute.
He's smashing something.
No worries. All right, so let's continue while Mike obviously joined. Doing something. It's a strange thing. And, I mean, I just – the reason I felt it was odd was all these things she forgot. And I'm thinking because this is a supernatural film based – or science fiction film based off of the ending, that maybe it was intentionally happened that she forgot.
Maybe.
Some force.
Well, but no, because my take, at least, is that that force is what's making her remember.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's possible. You're right. Because, again, we don't know, is it a person or that's the thing,
entity.
Right?
We see that monolith in the air, right?
It is a person because – if we believe the story that she learns from the quote-unquote kooks, we're learning that people are being replaced by – or changed after they look at the brick or do something to the brick. So someone who has a brick or knows something about the bricks or has seen a brick has changed, and they're the one that sent the anonymous email, and they're the one that sent the UPS, FedEx, DHL, whatever they have in Australia.
Or –
to their house, to her house.
Or whatever is in the monolith made that happen.
Well, and this is a long plan, right? I mean, for when she's young, so that's part of where I get kind of iffy on the whole thing.
I will say that's a oof, in my opinion, a flaw in the story. But I liked it enough that I'm willing to let it slide.
I agree. I just think there's something there. I just don't think we got it out of the story.
Well, I have a theory, and we'll get there. But to back up a little bit just again so everybody knows what we're talking about, she calls the art collector that it turns out her parents sold the brick to. And this guy's got like a dozen of these things. They are real, and he's been collecting them. And he even had them scanned at one point. And there were symbols inside the brick, which doesn't appear to open in any way. It's a solid brick. But somehow it has all these symbols inside that you can see if you scan it. And so,
by the way, I want to say that was really cool that they put that in there, because that's how they have read a lot of older scrolls now.
Right. I was going to bring that up, too. I was going to bring that up, too, Barrett, like paintings, too. Like, there's paintings underneath paintings.
Well, there's scrolls from Mount Vesuvius, I think it was, that they've got that they weren't able to see because they are burned and rolled up. And they've been able to actually get words from them now by using this type of technology.
That's right, there's this paint that this painting that they were talking about just like a month and a half ago. I forget who the artist was from, you know, hundreds of years ago, where someone gives birth, and there's a demon over the baby, and the mother and the doctor looking at the baby, and it's barely visible, and then when they did the scan, it's there. And then they went back and did research, and they found out that he originally had it, the demon there. And people said, "Yeah, you want to get rid of the demon? It's a little too much." And so he painted an old demon.
That's kind of cool because you can see it then.
Yeah,
critics have been fucking things up for centuries.
So I was thinking the same thing, Barrett, is like people do these weird things. I mean, even in movies, I mean, we talked about Get Out, where, you know, they have certain things in the background just as a nod to Scorsese or to whoever. I mean, I'll say this person, Taylor Swift, always puts hints in all her Instagram posts for the name of her next album or whatever. And people do it all the time. So it is interesting, and it's more – and, you know, the backwards, you know, you found the hidden message, you know, if you play a Pink Floyd song backwards or something, because they thought it was a joke. They said, oh, let's just put one in as a joke, you know. And so this stuff always happens. You know, and there's that thing about where you play Dark Side of the Moon to Wizard of Oz. It follows it perfectly. So things like this, whether it's true or not, or intentionally or not, you know, is Paul McCartney dead? All these things are probably true in the sense that they're put there on purpose to make people like be interested. But I think it's more of a wink and a nod. And maybe I was looking at that possibly as even though this is cool and weird that you X-ray the bricks, there's stuff there. It also is cool in the sense that, oh, someone's trying to fuck with us, you know? So,
well, and back to the plot narrative I was trying to get through. She sends these scans to her friend at a university who's, I guess, a linguist or some sort of language expert. And he looks at this and goes, this isn't like anything I've ever seen. He's like, have you verified this? Have you seen this with your own two eyes? And she's like, well, no. And he's like, You can't go public with this. This is what got you in trouble. He's like, your life is completely fucked because you said this guy was guilty and you didn't double check your source. Don't do it again.
But I think it's interesting is that she still clings to the fact that he's guilty.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Well, and even some of the people she talked to said he probably was guilty, but you still didn't have proof, so it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Right. And even then, even if they believe that he's guilty, you know, we don't know anything about the case because they don't talk about
right.
it.
Right, they don't tell us anything about it.
Right, and we don't know anything about it. But it reminds me of the Dan Rather thing, right, where he had the memo.
Bush thing,
yeah. That was
really kind of what ended him. Then they made a movie about it and just screwed it up. But where he had a memo or something about Bush and the National Guard and that was supposed to hurt Bush in the 2004 election, and he ran with it, and almost immediately some people on the internet who were font fanatics, because those are a thing, pointed out that the font that the message was written in, was typed in, didn't exist until like 1994. you know, when he was already governor of Texas. And so it was a fake, and Rather still was insisting that it was real.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, and he just refused to admit that the thing
he
was wrong.
He wanted to admit to getting duped.
So in the context of this movie, she's got the scan of this brick with all these weird symbols in it. And she's like, her friend is telling her, don't go public with this. You don't know if this is real. Don't make the same mistake twice.
Right. Well, and it was kind of weird too, because it's like, what is she going public with? She's just going public with a kooky story.
Black bricks. But her reputation is already trash. If she does it again, she's never going to recover.
Yeah. Oh. Now imagine for a moment that you are that reporter and you're not going with a story about the person who robbed the grocery store, right? Or who was selling arms to terrorists. You're going out with, I found Bigfoot.
Right.
Now, maybe you did find Bigfoot. But boy, if you can't turn up the good, that is, you're done.
You better be able to introduce them.
Right. Like Geraldo Rivera was able to recover from Al Capone's vault, right? But he had to follow that up with something that the Titanic wasn't off
thing or something, yeah.
Oh, fuck, man. I watched that Al Capone's vault bullshit.
I kind of had to because my family was watching it. I didn't understand the big deal. And then
it wasn't a big deal. There's nothing there.
It's one of the biggest disappointments on live TV ever.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, if you don't know what we're talking about because you're not old, just go look up, type up.
Al Capone's vault. We'll find it.
Or Geraldo Rivera, Al Capone's vault.
Is he still a thing? I don't.
He was let go of from the channel he was working for like 3 years ago, and I don't think I don't know what he's doing now.
He was on Fox for a long time, so is that he got let go from them?
Yeah. They let him go because I forget why. It was something stupid he did again, but. That's the thing again, right? I mean, but either way, back to the movie, as you were saying, Eric. So she, if her friends, and when she's talking about black bricks and stuff, I mean, even me, okay, you find, you know, first of all, she's just getting stuff from Claus. So none of that could mean anything. He could be lying too. He's just a kook. You know, like, oh, yeah, here's a scan. I'll send it to you.
A couple of people send her photos.
No, but the bricks may exist, and again, they're just photos.
Oh, you're talking about the scan. Yeah.
But even the scan, that scan may exist, but again, it's just a photo. So none of – I mean, this is not enough, and I think our friends are saying that. All the stuff you have, unless you actually are there, see it in person, have it scanned yourself, then it's – Yeah, you don't want to post anything. Because I wouldn't. I mean, as a podcaster, as a nobody, yeah, fine, whatever. Or if you're in crypto, that stuff, yeah, fine, whatever. But someone that's supposedly at her level, even if she has been disgraced,
right?
Who all she has is pictures and quotes from people. That's not enough for anything, in my opinion.
I agree, but her problem is that she's gotten onto this podcasting site that's already iffy. Yeah. And it's her last chance, and she has to give them something. Right. So she's under that deadline. So, yeah, I mean, she's going to start making mistakes, and this is one of them.
And her friends are making a good point, which is, all right, you're doing these stupid things, like meaning this weird podcast that is not real journalism. It's, quote, faux journalism. But she's also wants to become like good again, meaning, you know, received well again by the world.
Yeah, this is a for now project. This is not her future.
Right. Yeah. So she's not a smart person if she wants to get back into real journalism is what it's really coming down to. And I think her friends are trying to tell her that without saying you're stupid.
You could be right.
You know, but again, though, based off of what happens in the film, even if she is stupid, she is onto something because they're feeding her stuff.
She's stupid in a smart way because even though she's dishonest and like the thing that she does that really first made me go, oh, wow, I don't know if we should be on board with this person is when she's editing her podcast because she takes that phone call with the lady and chops it up so it's more interesting. She takes out parts.
Oh, that's bad.
She doesn't want the listeners to hear and, right. And to make it sound spookier and scarier. And later in the movie, that woman calls her out on it. It's like, I did not say those things like that. You are trying to make people think I said this in a way I didn't.
Yep. That was evil and unprofessional. I can see editing, you know, you cut out things and then maybe you have a pause with music and then you go to the next thing. But she didn't, because that's the, you know, the ellipsis that you would see in mm-hmm. news articles. And even that is, in my opinion, is a little iffy. But
she intentionally edited it seamlessly. So it sounded like all one sentence.
Yes. That was very bad.
Yeah. And I have a podcast that I occasionally listen to called Monster Talk, and they have on the on occasion guests that have been on shows like Monster Quest on the History Channel, and they talk about like how badly edited their stuff is, because like they're just trying to get them to say something that they can edit in a way to make it sound like they, the experts, believe Bigfoot and Nessie are real, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like. Say that. This is what I said. This is what they edited it out to. That kind of shit happens all the time. And it can be really despicable.
Editing. Just earlier today on Facebook, somebody was posting about how they needed to do YouTube videos and get better at it. And our buddy Kevin said, hey, you should check out Eric's YouTube channel. He does a really good job of looking at the camera and not having a script and everything. And I replied, I was like, well, thank you, Kevin, but I edit the shit out of those. There are all sorts of another take and ums and ahs and stutters and just start overs that get cut out on the editing room floor to make it look decent.
That's an entertainment thing.
Tightening up is one thing and changing meaning is another.
Exactly. Yes. It's like, you know, you take 12 takes and you use the best take, and like Mike always says, well, the actor could have sucked all the other 11 and they take the good take, and that's why they look like they're the best actor in the world. So, and that's for tightening up. This here is actually altering news articles, quote unquote news.
No takes on that. It's you're doing the truth. You're delivering the truth, and you're not because you're taking stuff out.
No, I'm just saying that you can do an awful lot with editing. That's all I'm saying.
Oh yeah, you definitely.
And she did.
The 150 episodes that Eric always asks about, those episodes I used to edit the shit out of by taking out the ahs and ums all the time for all of us.
It was back when Phil cared.
Yeah, well, I also felt it was...
No, it was back when Phil didn't have two kids.
Yeah, pretty much. That's really true. Yeah, once you have the two kids, things change. It's a little different, but that I see your point, though. Absolutely. Editing makes Eric's YouTube channel look perfect, but Eric...
I'm not perfect.
As honest would say that, you know, you get takes where you screw up the script or whatever, and you have to do it over and stuff. So it happens.
Yeah. But this woman intentionally edits this phone call recording to make it sound more dramatic. Yeah. And it's not cool.
And we do have a lot of reality stuff these days that do that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
But again, but a lot of those reality shows are
scripted.
Scripted in entertainment purposes, it's not a news show. If it's a news show,
I'm just saying it's still. I still feel it's wrong.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I was.
And to be quite frank, this podcast and the movie is also entertainment. I think she's just trying to do it professionally and make it interesting so it'll be a success. And because she's morally questionable, she chooses to do this edit.
Like, I'll point out with my students when I was teaching biology before I was just teaching chemistry, and like you're showing them, say, a nature video, and you see like the crocodile hunter or David Attenborough or someone going, look, well, maybe we'll find the spider around here. And the spider is sitting right in front of the fucking camera. You see him like looking and I'll pause on one of the kids. It's like, do you think he doesn't know that the camera people found it?
Or they just put it on there. So there was a spider, pull it out of the bucket and put it in there over there.
Right, exactly. The point is now really what he's doing is recreating what they probably were doing in the first place, which was looking for and trying to find it. But they don't want to see you not finding it, so they're shorting it for dramatic purposes. But it's dishonest. There's always a little bit of dishonesty, but it's a dishonesty that is at least not fudging the truth completely. Right. Whereas there are things that are just, right. And this is always my problem with documentaries is when they just completely fabricate something.
Oh, it's the worst. Yeah. Totally true. Totally true, Mike. Yep. So where do we want to go next with about this story? We did mention the housekeeper. We did mention Claus. There's the Ohio woman.
I keep on seeing the Ohio woman. I have no idea what you're talking about.
She calls a woman in Ohio. No, or Ohio woman.
The woman in the office building who.
Yeah, the office building.
In Paul's building in Ohio.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's another story. And she said she had a black brick and stuff. And then she finally freaks out and says, I don't want to talk about it anymore or something. And then Claus was talking about how his brother's ghost may have been there and stuff.
Oh, I got to give credit to the writer. There was a turn of phrase in this movie I'd never heard before, and it gave me the willies. When he's telling her that story about having the vision of his brother, he said he had a face like wet bread. I was just like, oh, fuck. That's disturbing.
Yeah, it didn't sound good.
Makes me wonder if that's the problem with a quote-unquote foreign film, is that I don't know if that's an invention of the writer or if that's some sort of weird colloquialism in Australia.
Right. Right. Well, this is supposed to be by someone from Germany. She called the guy in Germany, but again, it's a good description in a sense because it's like basically a melting face kind of what he's trying to talk about. So I saw what you saw, Eric. So whether it's colloquial or not, it was a good description of what they were trying to get across, I think, without showing us anything. because they could have showed us something, because the Ohio woman's talking about the office building, and while Claus is talking about the hallway and bathroom, they have us looking in the mind of the podcaster what she thinks she would see in Ohio or in Germany, but they never go to the reveal.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's to the movie's credit. Like Mike was saying, and just, he's right that this movie is almost an audio play, because it's so reliant on people speaking. But like in this particular instance, I think it's a plus, because I think using that turn of phrase is much more effective than trying to show us something that looks like that.
And I do want to be clear. When I said that, it was not a criticism of the film. It was just meant as a description. Mm-hmm. Audio plays work for a reason, right? They have to be engaging. And same with audiobooks, right? You have to have a good narrator. The story has to catch your attention. And I really think this does a very good job of that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So going back to the plot, she gets these scans from the art dealer, and her language buddy says they're not like anything else he's ever seen. And there's one symbol in particular that kind of catches her attention, I guess. She draws it a few times in different places. And then I'm a little hazy on what happens between then and between then and talking to her father. Somebody rings her doorbell, and the editing in this movie is really good because it happens when she's in the shower, and they show her get out of the shower and go to answer the door, and nobody's there. But the way they edit things, it's unclear if time passes between those two. There's the shot of her in the shower, and there's the cuts of her walking to the front door. It's unclear whether that's right away or maybe a couple minutes later. Because when she's out there, like, the whole front wall of the house is a window, right? If somebody was out there by the door, you'd see them.
Yeah.
But it's unclear whether it's like... Because either a couple minutes have gone by and whoever delivered the package is gone, or this package mysteriously showed up and the doorbell rang and nobody's there. And the editing really doesn't make it clear.
Well, I also didn't feel the house well enough to know if she's in a different room than where the door was, because I kept on thinking she was looking out the back of the house to the back yard, you know, of this estate. And the doorbell was a completely different area of the house. So I don't know.
Well, then why was she going to that door?
Well, I don't even know if that door was in the same room as where she had those windows that went from ceiling to floor. Was it?
It looked like it.
I couldn't tell. I was a little confused with the mapping of the house, but
I rewound that intentionally, okay, like during the scene, because yep, it cuts from her in the shower to her walking towards the door where she ends up finding the package. So okay, like when she opens the door and nobody's there, I'm like, at that point, because I didn't realize when she was walking towards the door that I was actually seeing through a window to outside the door. I thought I was looking at a stone wall. And then I realized, no, that whole thing is glass. So I rewound it to see if we could see anything when she's approaching the door. And because of the way they edited it, you can't.
Right. Gotcha. Yeah, that's an interesting thing. Yeah. Well, again, if we're right and it is supernatural or science fiction-y, then some quantum beast in another dimension pressed the doorbell. I don't know. And so we don't see it. I don't know.
Yeah, the whole thing's weird. Which is kind of cool and kind of frustrating.
Yeah.
Right.
Because she gets this package at the door, which ultimately, I mean, it's a fairly big box for what it contains. And it's really funny. They totally dupe me. Because you see this box and you're like, oh, somebody just delivered a brick to her door, right?
Right, exactly.
And so you're waiting for her to open that box and pull out a brick. And she opens up this box and there's just a bunch of shredded paper. And that's all that's in the box, you think at first. You're like... Well, that was disappointing.
Well, and it's an interesting thing about film versus real life, which is the box is the filmmaker's tricking us. While when she picks up the box, she immediately knows it's not a brick because it weighs nothing, right? Mm-hmm. But we don't know that, so she knows more than we do,
right?
And so it's a little of a trick. And then when she opens it, and it's just paper, and then she pulls out the. Okay, we're going to see the brick. She already knows this ain't going to be a brick.
Right.
So, and then it is the thumb drive. And at that point, once the thumb drive is played, that's when the movie changes, I feel, because that brings the big twist. That's the big twist, I think.
Right.
And
so the thumb drive has a video on it. It's a video of her I don't remember the number, but – a birthday of hers when she was a young kid.
Yeah, Mike said it was the 9-year-old birthday, and it was right after, if I'm not mistaken, Mike, you were the one that said this, after we see the black brick in the sky, which is a strange...
I don't remember when that came in. I remember seeing the black brick in the sky. Again, I was a little distracted while doing the film.
I'm pretty sure it was right before that, yeah. I'm pretty sure.
Right.
Yeah,
which further leads to my theory.
Yeah.
People suck?
No, the other
that's
one.
Not
another
a,
one.
That's a different one than a theory.
I don't have as much proof to back up this theory, but so basically this video shows her at her birthday saying that she just got a black brick and she does not remember this. And then she ends up talking to her father and she finally figures out that the woman she called at the beginning of the movie, whose story she edited for dramatic purposes, worked for her parents. And she just didn't remember it, or didn't connect the two things. Maybe she remembered that somebody worked for her parents and then didn't recognize her photo. But she finally is starting to remember that, yeah, when she was a kid, these people were for her parents. And she confronts her dad about the whole thing, who tells the story we were kind of having a discussion about before, about how our podcaster, when she was a kid, kind of threw the housekeeper's daughter under the bus and said that she damaged all the furniture. And then it's revealed that no, she's the one that carved the furniture. And the way she carved the furniture was the symbol that caught her eye in the scans of the brick. Not only did she draw it on a bunch of pieces of paper after seeing the scan, but it's the exact same thing she carved in the table when she was a little kid.
Right. And also the thumb drive was the paper that was it was wrapped in. When she puts the paper all together, it's that symbol as well.
Yes, thank you, Phil. That's another detail.
Yeah, and then also we learn before she even calls her father, she calls back the woman and the woman's daughter and has an argument with them and says they're trying to steal money from her and, you know, trying to blackmail her or whatever and trying to ruin my life because you're psychotic revenge seekers or whatever. And then we also learn that not only did her actions get them fired, but as you mentioned earlier, Eric, it also got the girl thrown out of music school, which ultimately changed her whole trajectory in life. And she even says it to her, like, what you did changed everything and ruined my life because of it and all this other stuff. And I don't care what you think, you're the one and blah, blah, blah. And that's when she calls her dad. And then that's when she looks underneath, after talking to her dad, she looks underneath the dolly on the table and sees that the symbol is there that is actually in the brick that she carved when she was a kid, and that she was the guilty party, not her housekeeper and the daughter. And then she also I think that's when the final scene happens, right? When the thing pops out, but I don't know.
Well, I want to say that I feel like the woman, the girl that got blamed, had more than just losing her musical stuff. I feel like the father said, oh, she would have just gotten a slap on the wrist. I don't think they paid attention to whatever happened to her afterwards. Mm-hmm. I think she might have gotten in more trouble than they think or that he cared about.
Well, that's true. That's a possibility, Barrett. Yeah, I mean, the moment they remove her, they fire them, and they pull funding, they decided to just move on. And what that happens is because of what their daughter did. You could be right, Barrett. That who knows, that maybe they went homeless because they had no more money for a job, or the daughter became a troublemaker and her life was ruined because she became bitter and angry, and so she stole or became a punk, or who knows? I don't know.
We don't know.
Yeah. So those are fair points too, Barrett. You know, her life changed for multiple reasons, but all of it changed because of the lie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's one thing that we know 100% is a fact, is the daughter, meaning the podcaster, lied and sent the whole trajectory of whatever life the housekeeper and the housekeeper's daughter went on after that was all because of her. Now,
but it's interesting they don't blame the father. They don't seem to.
Well, because they, you know, I think they don't blame the father because they know the father actually believed the daughter, meaning they understood that the daughter said it was them and the father was just reacting to what the daughter said, which is these people just destroyed your table and did all these terrible things, ripped your house apart and whatever else they did. And so they blame her because she's the one. If she did not lie, there wouldn't have been any problem. So I could see them being angry at the father or the family, and they were a little bit. They go, I worked 20 years for this family, and then they just – it was all thrown away because they blamed me for – my daughter for whatever happened. But the person that is the one they're pissed at is the daughter, especially when they confront the daughter and say, you're the one that did it all to us. So I see where you're coming from, Barrett, but I mean, do you blame the parents of the bully, or do you, if they aren't responsible for
the a lot of people parents? Do. A lot of people do.
Well, I know that's maybe that's a bad analogy. I'm just trying to think of an analogy where do you blame a person?
I think if you're blaming people for
400 years ago.
I think if you're blaming people for stuff, anybody's a target. You know what I mean? Like anybody that was involved would be a target.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
Or did she even cognizantly do it, or was she influenced?
Right. That was my question too.
Well, and even then, though, even then, you know, I'll go back to what Mike always says, which is she's just a stupid 9-year-old.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's not fully formed mentally at all.
Right. But based off of the type of human being she became as an adult and what I read in reviews about the character and Privilege and all this other crap, maybe she was a stinker and was always going to be a stinker.
I think a lot of behavior could be traced back to her parents.
Maybe. I don't know. We don't know enough about the parents to say that.
That's just an impression I had. From that conversation with the father.
Yeah, he didn't seem like a great guy.
Really? I didn't get that, but that's just a cultural disagreement, I guess. I got it that they actually believed the daughter. They couldn't get true compensation for the damage. And later on, meaning like 4 or 5 years later, they kind of started figuring out, oh my God, our daughter was the crook. And
well, and now they go back and like, well, it happened a long time ago, so who cares what the truth is? Move on.
Right. They didn't go back and fix it once they did learn the truth, so that doesn't make them great people.
Yeah.
No, but at the same time, I mean, he took care of his daughter.
Right.
Well, that's sort of something.
Yeah, so
he did something that wasn't great to get the result he wanted, and that's something that his daughter now does. That's right. All I'm saying.
Right.
Okay, that's fair. but you know, the daughter hoodwinked him.
Maybe.
We don't know that.
Well,
we honestly don't know that he didn't know.
Yeah, well, that's
true. There are little things in there that make me think he did, and then there's other things that make me go, I don't know. But
it's
not trustworthy.
The I know, but I don't want to know, so I'm not actually going to know.
Right.
I just
right. That's the feeling I get the most.
That's what I would get. I don't think it was – because otherwise I don't think he would have took the brick. Right. I think because he doesn't – in my opinion, Barrett, they don't need the money. And he was giving money to
I don't know what this need money thing is about. It's not about need. It's want. People want more.
I don't think he wants because he was giving free tuition for the housekeeper's daughter, which he didn't have to do. He was doing it because he's a nice guy. So, in other words, he was giving money away rather than trying to want more money. So that's why I'm saying I don't think he intentionally stole anything from them. I think – you were right, though, that or it was Mike or Eric that said it, that he may have known that his daughter was lying, but he didn't want to believe that his daughter was lying.
Well, there's also the matter of perception, because We don't know for sure who the brick was intended for.
Right.
I'm pretty sure it was for our main
character.
He says
it was on their land.
I honestly, based off of what's going on, I think the brick was always intended for the podcaster.
I think so too. However, like, she thought it was for her. The housekeeper thought it was for her because they both lived in the same house and it just showed up there. So,
and they found it. Right.
Found it. So from the father's point of view, he owns the house. That brick showed up there. It's his brick.
Yep.
Right.
So from a certain perspective, it makes sense.
Right. That's true too. Yeah. And that's the thing. It's just a terrible, unfortunate situation because the father and the housekeeper appeared to have a great relationship for 20-something years to the point where he decided to send and help the housekeeper's daughter to go to private school.
Mm-hmm.
And then it all got fucked up because the daughter was a lying scumbag. But again, as Mike always says, she's just a stupid 9-year-old. So, mm-hmm. Unfortunately, so, and then what are you going to do, you know? And then, I don't know. It's a shame. The whole thing's just a shame.
So, I think it was after the conversation with the father that she calls back the art dealer and basically threatens him.
Yeah, she blackmails him or something. Yeah.
She basically threatens to ruin his gallery unless he shows her the bricks.
Right. Yeah, immediately. So, not tomorrow, but immediately.
Right.
He said, "Yeah, I'll do it for you tomorrow because I'm at this event." And she goes, "No, I want it now." And I'm going to go, tell the cops. And then he goes, "All right, fine. Give me 30 minutes because I got to get back to the house."
Mm-hmm. So she calls him there on FaceTime, and he shows her where he's got all these bricks. And then something happens. It's intentionally not shown to us. Something bad happens to the art dealer.
Yeah.
We don't know exactly what. I have a theory. He says his brother is there and then makes a bunch of funny noises and then they lose their connection. And when she tries to call him back, it says the caller is not available. So that happens. And then is it right after that that she has the incident where she gets sick?
Well, before we bring that up, I want to add one more thing to your point, Eric, which is she starts reading, and I forget where it was in the movie, but they're talking about how – oh, yeah, it was from the Ohio woman, I think, or something where – oh, no, it was from the woman who wrote the news article in England, and she calls that woman, and the woman talks about how – there was people were being influenced like a virus through words.
Right.
So the words would cause people to change.
And at the time, everybody was paranoid about Russia. So they believed it was a Russian weapon of some sort that was making people get sick through hearing something, word of mouth.
Right. And then the podcaster says, "Could you give me the address and all that stuff of your source?" And she goes, "No, he got fired, and they think he's a kook now or whatever. You won't find him. He's gone." So that's
he disappeared.
Yeah, it was a dead end. Yeah, basically the MI6 probably took him out or something. Scotland Yard. But either way, that was a huge reveal, I feel, based off of what happens at the end.
Right. And there was another conversation she had with somebody. I think this was just a random person who contacted her by the brick.
The guy
where the guy was terrified because he said that his father wasn't there anymore. There was nothing behind his eyes.
Yeah. I think that was I think it was Mexico, but I can't remember. But it was some guy because she's calling people all over the country. I mean, all over the world, and she lives in Australia, and so she calls the U.S., she calls Germany, she calls the U.K., and I think this one's Mexico. And basically, yeah, what happens is this is where she gets the idea that people. This is another reveal for the ending because the father is now different.
Mm-hmm.
He's changed.
Right.
And that was a And then he says, if you want to be smart, I would just drop the story and forget about it. And she refuses to do that. And he, I guess he hangs up and wouldn't take her calls anymore or something. Something weird. Or he goes, I don't want to talk to you anymore about this. But don't do this story. Stop.
Right.
And but this was early in the film. So you think he may just be some crazy guy or something, but
it's important though because it has to do with our final the big scene, right?
Exactly.
So
there's a lot of checkoffs.
So the big scene is that she's getting sick, which is back to the whole thing about people getting sick from word of mouth. But then, and again through another trick of editing, she starts like trying to throw up and can't, and she reaches into her mouth and pulls the brick out of her mouth. And there was, you know, and they had to do it, but there's a cut to the back of her head and then a cut back to the front. She's got half the brick out of her mouth. So that was some convenient editing, but you know, how else are you going to do it? So she basically pukes up one of the bricks. And it's all covered in stomach acid and blood.
Bile.
Right? And she's freaking out. And she goes and she grabs a hammer and just smashes it to bits. And to me, it looked like obsidian. Would you agree?
Yeah.
The way it broke apart.
Or onyx, maybe. But yeah. Yeah, obsidian, yeah, because of the way it breaks apart. Yeah, that's a really good one.
Yeah. So she smashes the brick, and she thinks she's done. And then she hears a weird noise and goes and looks back around the corner. And where the brick was smashed to pieces is now standing up a replica of herself.
Right.
So
I actually thought this was a dream sequence at first.
Yeah, I did too, and I was getting so mad about it. I was like, if this is all in her head, I'm going to be pissed. But then, no, it's not all in her head. The replica comes out, and she tries to talk to it. She tries to interview it, gets out her little voice recorder.
That was the funny part.
It was totally in character, though, right?
Journalist to the end.
And the replica reaches out and just with one hand totally crushes this it's, I actually recognize the digital recorder. I have one like it. It's a Zoom digital recorder. It would not take a person of normal strength could not crush one of those one hand. But this replica of her does. And then she gets the hell out of there and tries to run away from it. And it tracks her down outside, and there's a confrontation, which once again is conveniently edited. There's a struggle, and somebody wins. And because the way they edit the fight scene, is it the original? Is it the duplicate? Not entirely sure, but I have
because they have the digital. Or let me rephrase, not digital. The duplicate has the exact same clothes, too. So whatever created it creates the clothes, too. So
one of them dies, and the other one puts stones on their body to make it heavier and throws it in the water to get rid of the body.
Yeah, there's a pond on this state.
Yeah. And then goes back in and starts recording the podcast.
Right, exactly. So one thing is that she's hiding out at her parents' house, maybe the quote unquote cottage, because you know these type of wealthy folk have hundreds of houses. But either way, her parents aren't around; they're on vacation or something, and she's hiding out there to avoid other news reporters and paparazzi because of her fuck up. My guess is the replacement one and is now going to do the podcast, and all the buffoons who listen to this podcast will turn into like the Mexican guy where his father.
Well, let me make sure we're all on the same page here up to a certain point.
Yeah, sure.
Which is that what's going on here is basically an invasion of the body snatchers type of situation, right, with these bricks.
Yeah, it seems that way.
And when you get a brick, eventually it turns into a replica of yourself, with which then murders you and takes your place.
Right. And she probably would have been murdered and taken over way back as a 9-year-old had she not had the bricks sold to the Klaus guy.
Right. And that's what happened to the art dealer that we don't see, right?
Right. Well, so, that's the thing. The brick does two things. If it's meant for you, it's going to replace you with a replica. But if it's not meant for you, it makes you either go crazy or get killed by some sort of being.
Okay.
That's my guess. Because Claus, I don't know, did he actually – yeah, that's right. He did. He got a brick, right, himself originally, and then he just got a bunch of bricks. No, but did he buy them – he bought most of them. But did he get one for himself specifically?
I thought he said that he did, that he got one.
Okay.
And that's what made him want to collect them.
Yeah, I think you're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I the housekeeper, let's assume the housekeeper, the brick wasn't meant for her, but it fucked her up and she didn't like it. It made her have dreams or whatever, but it wasn't meant for her. But somehow the brick, a new brick, appears. Again, that's a weird thing, too. It's like, how does this brick come out of her, the podcast? Because that is different than all the other bricks who are just found or they're sent to them. And her, the original brick's in Germany, supposedly. So I don't know. So there's some obviously issues with the script that are unexplained. But go ahead, Eric, and continue what you were saying.
I was just going to say, because there's – okay, so from what we get earlier in the movie about things spreading via word of mouth.
Yes, yeah.
This podcast that she's doing is actually causing more people to get bricks, in theory, right?
Right. That's exactly okay. What I got. I got that exactly.
So I understand why you think it might have been a replacement at the end doing the podcast.
Yes.
Because that furthers the cause of the monolith, right?
Yes.
So
exactly.
But there was one thing in particular that makes me think that it was the original her that survived. And yep. Here's the thing, which is that there's a little side. It's not even a side story. It's just something that's going on in the background of the movie, which is that she has a turtle.
Yes.
And the turtle has been sick during this movie. It's not eating. Which fits in with the whole, you know, monolith sickness going on, right? And then right at the end of the movie, after the confrontation, while she is recording the podcast, there's a quick shot of the turtle eating something. So the turtle is better now.
Okay.
And I don't know if the turtle would be better if it was the replicant that was there instead of the original.
Yeah, that's what right. I was thinking about that too.
Well, I'll tell you this. It's obviously an ambiguous ending. Now, if it's the alien that won, and maybe these clues are also ambiguous, but they're good clues that like the turtle. But let's say the alien won, then we know what's going to happen is that she's going to create more brick people. Mm-hmm. But if it isn't the alien that won, and it's the real podcaster that won, she's going to say her story. And the only people that are going to believe her are the kooks anyway. And her career is probably dead for real journalism. And that doesn't mean the aliens aren't going to try again with another brick on
well, it. And there's also the fact that if she continues doing this podcast and she does tell her story, doesn't that still create more brick people?
It's possible. Yeah, why not, right?
Yeah. So yeah. I think at the end, she's so desperate – to redeem herself, at least in popularity.
Right, that's popularity.
She's going to go ahead and tell this story anyway,
yep.
Knowing that it could very well create more brick people, and she just doesn't care.
I don't think I think that's a good point, Eric, because we're assuming she's sane, and I'm saying this has actually happened to her. So she knows there's something bad out there.
There's too much physical evidence to think it was all a hallucination.
Right. It's not a hallucination. So she knows there's aliens out there. She knows that they can turn put bricks in your belly. She knows that they can make duplicates of you that want to kill you. And she knows, based off of what the UK journalist said, the aliens, the quote unquote virus is spread by words. So I think you're absolutely right. If it is a sane person, let me rephrase, if it isn't the duplicate and it is the real podcaster, then she is irresponsible as well. Yes. And she's just an evil person. I mean, she doesn't care. She just wants, well, you're right. She's a narcissist. She just wants her popularity back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's good. I like that. That's a good observation. So, Mike, but
you've been quiet for a while. Do you have a take on this, or are you still busy? I guess he's still busy.
No, I'm not. This is where I'm really kind of lost is at the end is what was real, what wasn't, what was going on. Because if there's aliens, demons, Atlanteans, I have no idea. They're doing this. Why? For what practical gain would there be to do it, or whatever gain? And yet, it's the only way I have to explain the events that we actually see transpire in the film.
Mm-hmm.
Just the shot of the ship over the house leads you to believe that
something's
it's
going on.
And right now, the filmmaker could always say, "Oh no, that was always in her head." But okay. I would call bullshit on that. If I'm not saying he did it, if they said something like that, because that's that would be bad filmmaking.
Yeah.
She
would need to be in that scene and see it for us to believe.
Right,
that.
For that to work. I mean, cinema has a language, and he's now speaking Klingon. It just doesn't work.
Well, and it was clearly intentionally done to leave us not knowing for sure.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I get the idea that, I mean, to me, the brick is the bottled up guilt
mm-hmm.
that she feels.
It does feel like a big metaphor.
Right. And you had the Klaus, his guilt over the fact that he enjoyed his brother's, not it wasn't enjoyed as a wrong term, but that he was happy over his brother's death. So that these people are carrying this guilt inside of them, and it's manifesting as these bricks, is how I take it. I saw something. I got a chance to look up one thing. I just typed in monolith WTF, and it turns out monolith WTF is an actual thing, so I couldn't do that. So I had just like ending. I saw one thing and saw one thing. What was the ending? And it postulated something about having to do with mental health. But to me, that doesn't really work because I don't think it represents her mental health. I think it's too specific towards people who have done things they feel bad about or should feel bad about. So in that case, are these aliens? Why would are these alien therapists come to help humanity?
No. No, they're not.
Why are we only black-bricking people with feelings of shame or guilt? Or is it, as Eric would say, they're all shameful and guilty. It doesn't really matter. We all have something to feel bad about because people suck.
Yes.
But they don't suck so much that they don't feel guilty about the shitty things they've done, which is the part I find implausible.
Well, and that works fine as a metaphor. But as far as storytelling goes, I mean, upon reflection, I was all in this movie when I was watching it. And I still think it's a good movie. But the whole deal with the mystery of and the reveal of her remembering what happened when she was a child doesn't fit very well with the further explanation about the monolith in the sky and Invasion of the Body Snatchers, right?
Right.
Right. And
it
this
seems
is,
to me if they were doing this, it would take, you know, less than 20 years for them to get it done. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
Well, maybe they're like alien turtles and they live a long lifespan.
Maybe. I mean, I'm just saying.
Yeah, there's some questions about the plot. There really is.
But this is where I understand schism between the audience and the critics, because I think critics can look at this and look at all the good that's there. And the audience doesn't care about all the good that's there, because the audience is often capable of enjoying shit. True. As long as they succeed. I'm not trying to say that, and I don't sound snobby about that.
Because we can't give the critics credit either, because as we know, a lot of critics are fucking stupid idiots. So I don't want to poo-poo the audience, but say the critics are correct. So continue, Mike.
No, but there's a lot of like audiences that they're just looking for a good time, and they don't care that the performance isn't the greatest performance ever. You know, they don't care that every joke in the comedy is derivative, or that the romance is formulaic. They just want to have a good time, and that's all there is to it. And I can certainly see an audience looking at the ending of this film and saying, what the fuck? And they're not going to walk out of the theater or turn off the TV. I feel good about what it is that they just watched. Whereas a critic can say, yeah, it was a weird ending. I don't know if the ending works, but I really liked this. I really liked that. And they're grading it in a way that's different. It doesn't have to necessarily be an emotionally satisfying film.
Right, and we also know that Rotten Tomatoes, a good review by a critic, could be, you know, 2.5 stars. And, right. You know, it doesn't mean 4 stars necessarily, you know. It doesn't mean it's a film that has a 90, this one actually has 80, I think, 80-something. That doesn't necessarily mean that film is better than another film that has 80-something that is considered a classic. It just means that
right.
A bunch of people said it was a good film, but...
It means 83% of the reviews that were registered are positive.
Right, exactly. And positive doesn't necessarily mean classic, but right. It also doesn't mean that it's just okay. It could be somewhere, any of those things. Yeah. Yep.
I find your waffling on Rotten Tomatoes to be hilarious, Phil. When it backs a movie you like, you're all about it. But then...
No. I've been saying recently, as you know, within the past, I will backtrack that for the past year, I've been saying I check the audience scores as much now as the reviewers, critic scores, because as we see, and I always bring it up now, the big difference between critics and audiences, which usually means a bad sign for a film. And I'm not saying necessarily for this case, this film here, this film's back difference is probably like Mike said, which is it's ambiguous ending and it's like, what the heck? But a lot of times when critics say something is good, like The Stand miniseries, and everybody
did
else
did says, that really get positive critical reviews?
It did. A decent
wow. Review. Okay.
Yeah. And then when the viewership audience says it's shit, that makes sense because it was shit and the critics are so yeah I don't think
it's cut and dried.
Yeah, I used to be more apt, but I always used to follow certain critics, but they all died, unfortunately. So I have no
you know why?
Old age.
Yeah, because you're old.
Yeah, exactly. So
you're old, Phil.
Yes.
And you're getting older right well, now.
I just want to remind you a few more times.
I just had a birthday 6 days ago, so that is
true. I know.
Yes. So yeah. Either way, it's I just want to defend myself and say I'm not a full Rotten Tomatoes critical. I just bring it up, and I now compare.
I know. I'm just busting your balls because it's fun.
And you did well.
Got him in all defensive mode.
Yes. I was all defensive. It's like, hold on. These critics. No. I don't like the critics anymore. Ebert's dead. So, Mike, you were saying before I brought that up about the
audience.
Rotten Tomato. Well, not even the audience. That Rotten Tomato good review doesn't necessarily mean truly a good review. It just means a binary. It was okay or not okay.
I think he was more, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, but I think he was more trying to point out that critics look for different things to appreciate when they're watching a movie than general audiences.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right. Yeah. And look, critics, and I've seen a lot of critic review. My mind will always go back to Siskel and Ebert. And there are times they really enjoy film. But they may really, and we'll talk about how, you know, this film is emotionally satisfying. This film really hit me in this one. And they can definitely get that. It's just harder to hit that threshold because they've seen so much. Right? They put way more weight than on novelty to trigger it. Whereas somebody goes to movies two or three times a year, it doesn't take as much to make them happy. Same as if you go out to eat at a restaurant every night. Then eating in a fancy restaurant every night it's going to take a lot more to wow you, right, than just going out for your birthday or for your anniversary or something. And I think they just are more likely to look from a critical eye at story structure and cinematography and music and weight all of these things almost evenly. And we all also have our biases. You know, for me, I like good storytelling. And I mean literally, is there a beginning, a middle, and an end? You know, does the story have a logical progression? Do I cheer for the characters? Am I like, as opposed to films that are just, in my wording, up their own ass to how self-important they are, and at deconstructing the traditional narrative structure, that's not my thing. It's why I think Jim Cameron is a successful filmmaker, even if I don't know that he's always the best writer around. And even if I don't think he is the most visually visionary filmmaker, although effects-wise, sure. But like, he's not necessarily going to compose shots the same way.
He doesn't do anything.
He knows how to tell a story.
Yep. True.
You know, Spielberg.
He knows how to. Yeah.
Tells
it. Yep. Well, right. Cameron, I think, is a little more effective doing it than Spielberg, because Spielberg's had a few duds, while Cameron is not as prolific. But I know your point.
So, does anybody have a completely different take on this movie than I do?
No. I brought up the fact that I had certain aspects of the film that made me think certain things until the very end. And then when that happened, it's like, okay, they're going a completely different way, and they're going the way that was most expected if you wanted to just do a regular film. But
there's no but. Yeah. So after that, and what you said, Eric, I would concur 100% with everything you said. So I think I'm right on board with you. If my original viewing experience before the twists may have been a little different than yours, I don't know. But all in all, I think we all, me and you anyway, came to the exact same point at the end.
Well, and you have a really interesting hang-up when it comes to watching movies, Phil, which is that if a main character has some bad traits.
Yeah, it's a dink.
You hate them instantly and almost hate the movie instantly just because they're not a good person.
Yeah. I won't go that far, but you're –
I'm exaggerating for clarity.
But you're onto something. Yeah, yeah.
I
don't like watching bad people. They just bother me. Unless it's a gangster. I mean, if the film I'm going in and I know they're bad people, then I'm okay with it. Like you know, if I watch a Scorsese gangster film, it's like, okay, I'm expecting a certain thing. But the ones where it's not as ambiguous and they're just bad people, in other words, she's not a murderer, she's not a, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I do have that trait.
And whereas I can identify that they're bad people, but I don't get it. Like, you get almost personally offended by it. Whereas I'm just like, okay, well, this person isn't honestly. Let's see where the story goes.
Yeah. No, that's fair. Yep. Well, and I think this film, though, even though she was a bad person, I think my problem with it was they decided to go the route that was the most obvious, which is there was an alien and they were going to possibly use her as a filter to spread more bricks.
Mm-hmm.
If they had gone where it was actually a conspiracy where it was people trying to get a revenge on her for what she did to the housekeeper and her daughter, I felt that was more of an interesting trait because, again, I also
considered that possibility.
Yeah. Well, and I also was looking at the film too, as these people are just kooks. It's like, there's no bricks. And if there's a brick, it's just made man-made and some bozo did it. Or,
well, see, that's another hang up. You're trying to put reality into a movie.
No, but that's true. But I got to look at a story and I got to go in and I got to go, okay, this is where I got to determine. Are we going to go true science fiction or is this just crazy?
But you're already thinking
for Bigfoot.
You're thinking they're kooks before you even decided if it's a science fiction movie.
But as Mike said, they're immediately looking for Bigfoot. And the people calling her are talking about Bigfoot, basically. And so it's like even the first caller during the credits was a kook. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, okay.
Well, and I'm not holding that against you, Phil, that you thought all the callers were kooks because it's that kind of show.
Right, yeah.
All the
yeah.
what are?
Callers.
Oh, all the callers. Yeah.
So
I'm not saying I'm holding it against you, but that's your view immediately, whereas me, I was thinking some of these might be real.
Right.
Yeah, for the purpose.
Some of them saw Bigfoot.
Yeah, for the purpose of the film. Yeah, right.
Right. Yeah, no, I'm right. I don't believe in black bricks in the real life.
Right, but once we found out,
now I want to mail you a black brick.
Once we found they confronted her when she called back and flipped out at the housekeeper, I thought, okay, this is an interesting film because they aren't going to go the most obvious thing, which is there is black bricks that turn people into aliens. They're going where it's two people that got fucked over, and this is their way to get vengeance on her. And I thought that's where they were going. And then she was just some crazy kid that had hidden it from her memory because she is, you know, whatever. And they were going to go that route. And I thought that was where they were going to go. And it was really not going to be a true science fiction film at all. And it was,
you know, that wouldn't be a bad story, but yeah. it never entered my mind as a possibility.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. I wasn't expecting it to go that way either because, you know, we were talking about a science fiction film, Monolith, maybe there's grays or whatever. But then as I'm watching the film, I'm thinking,
No grays, Phil.
But when we're watching the film and we see a podcaster and this type of show she has, and then the type of person she was prior to the film even started, I'm thinking, okay, they're going to trick us to make us think it's science fiction and it really is going to be something else. And then when it turned out to be science fiction, I was kind of disappointed. Because that was what they were going for, and sure enough, it happened. But I do like the idea at the end, though, that, oh, okay, she's spreading the bricks. Whether it's the alien or whether it's her just being a dink to get famous again, she spreads bricks. And I thought that was a pretty cool thing, even though I was hoping that they didn't go the science fiction route by the time she confronted the people that got fired by her father.
No, and honestly, it really just cements in my mind what a piece of crap this character really is. Because we don't know the whole story about her defamation suit, but we know she didn't verify her source, which is a problem. And then we see her do the questionable editing on the audio.
Yeah, that was
so bad. Like, oh, that's not right. And then, like, at the end of the story, I believe that shot of the turtle verifies that the original her won the fight, and that she's still gonna endanger how many thousand people that are listening to this podcast by telling the story.
She's gonna go all
she knows
in.
That's what she's doing, and she just doesn't care.
Yeah, yeah. Right, she knows how bad it can be too, and like, she was strong enough that she was able to kill her alter ego that was created by this thing. Not everybody is. So it's just horrible.
And also, she cares more about fame than respect.
And the well-being of the human race.
That's true, too. We already know that she doesn't care about the human race. But she also cares more about her own fame than becoming a real journalist again, too, which is kind of funny. And I thought that, because, you know, she knows everybody's going to think she's a kook, but she doesn't care because she's going to get because two things. One, she knows it's real because she saw it her firsthand, but also she knows she's going to get hundreds of thousands of listeners because the people are following this story, and it's just going to get bigger, I guess, especially now that they're all going to turn into aliens.
I would love to listen to the writer or director commentary on the ending of this movie, because I'd really like to know what they had in mind, and whether it's exactly what I think it is, or maybe a little bit different or completely different, because they really just leave it pretty vague.
Yeah, when you
it's clearly on purpose too.
When you search for explain the ending, you're going to get the people that say, oh, she was an alien, or oh, she wasn't. But there's a lot of them that say, explain the ending here is explained. And what they do is they say it's intentionally ambiguous, and you have to figure it out. But I think your point, Eric, which is the best, which is it doesn't matter whether or not she's replaced, because she's doing the same thing no matter what.
Well, right. Yeah, but it matters in that either it's an alien or she's a piece of crap.
Right, right, exactly. Right. And either way, she's causing more people to become aliens.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, there's nothing out there that's definitive. And the best.
Well, and that's why I'm saying that, like, I want to hear from the people that made the movie.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Because
the turtle thing is really.
But if they ended the movie like that, then I'm pretty sure they wouldn't be willing to explain it either.
Yeah, the turtle thing is the only thing that leads me to believe that what you said could be true, because otherwise, I don't. She pushes the body into the water. I'm not quite sure why she does that if she's the real one.
Right, that's a good point. Because if she's the real one, wouldn't she want the
evidence?
Yeah, that's a really good point.
But maybe not having the evidence is exactly what she does want.
Because, I mean, she's not going to go to jail for killing a doppelganger, because she does have a twin sister, and if it's the same DNA as her, you know, she has a gold mine there. So why would she? Yeah, you're right. That's a good point, Barrett.
I like
that. That adds another. Yeah, that adds another thing. Yeah.
No, that's a fantastic point. Damn it!
it makes me believe that the alien won.
I don't know. I'm still. But
why is the turtle not sick anymore? Is it just the process of the brick taking over that makes people sick?
Yeah, I don't know.
Or, like I said, she just doesn't want anybody to know about that part because she wants to have the mystery, but not the reality to be able to tell people.
Mm.
Yeah.
Which still makes her.
Well, proof would be handy though, if you're trying to tell this story.
Yeah. 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 And to be honest, maybe the turtle wasn't sick. Maybe the turtle just didn't feel like eating and she was trying to force it to eat.
Well, then why'd they put it in the movie?
Yeah, exactly. Then,
yeah. Yeah. That's
maybe it wasn't because the real her, it didn't like anymore. And now it likes the alien.
Turtle knows a piece of shit when it sees one.
Right.
That's true. Yeah, but I still have to say that was a great point by Barrett about why would she hide the body?
No, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, worst case is you just put it in the garage or something, or the basement or something, mm-hmm. you know, and then see what happens in the next 48 hours. And then if things go bad, then you get rid of the body. But if not, you go, I got proof. I got a doppelganger right here.
You get someone out there that's a biologist or something to take a look at the body.
Right.
Could. And you do your podcast on it, like an alien autopsy.
Right. Yeah, and it seems like she has the connection to all these type of faux science or different science people, that she could have got someone there.
Well, whether we get definitive answers or not, I'm pretty sure this isn't going to be anybody's favorite movie of the year, but it sure did make for an interesting conversation.
Yes.
I would say so. Anything else on anybody's list that we wanted to bring up?
No, we've actually been talking about this longer than I thought we would.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, me and Barrett were talking offline like 5 hours ago, saying, yeah, I don't think we're going to have much to talk about. And we actually had a lot. All right, so I guess we're done talking about the film. So, and we've recorded for a while, so I guess we'll just start wrapping up. But before we do, Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan. What's that?
I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Askansity Podcast. That's spelled Askancity. You can find it wherever we get podcasts.
And Mike, what's that podcast that me, you, Barrett, and Sean Fox are doing?
That is Cortana's Communiques, in which we discuss a TV show on Paramount Plus that may or may not be based on the video game series Halo.
Indeed. And Barrett, what's that podcast that me and you do, and we bring in other people sometimes to join us, and we talk about stuff? What's that?
Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews, where we talk about anything and everything.
Indeed. And Eric, what's that other podcast that me, you, and Mike do based off of a Mission Impossible argument?
It is called Cinema A La Carte, where we talk about movies that don't fall under the Dark Discussions umbrella. It was going to be a monthly thing, but then Phil refuses to stop doing television podcasts, so we do it every now and then.
All right, sounds good. So let's get into our final thoughts on this film here called Monolith. Australian film. So let's start with you, Eric.
Yeah, I like this movie. I really enjoyed the atmosphere and the performance from Lily Sullivan, and I want to see her in more stuff. I love the conversation we had tonight. I think it made me actually like the movie a little bit more. I would like definitive answers, but I can also appreciate the movie without them.
All right, sounds good. Mike?
Now, like I said, I was not in a great frame of mind watching the film for various reasons. I was very distracted watching it today. This was a not good day, and I would probably want to watch this again because it still managed to hold my attention as much as almost anything probably could. And I know there's things I probably missed in there. And I think it's an interesting enough story that, unlike some of these things that we watch where I feel like the director is and writer is just full of shit, I don't think that's the case here. I think it's too well put together for them to be full of shit. Now, they may be. They may just be a very convincing bullshitter. But I'm going to go back and see if I – especially now that you know the story, right? We know where it ends.
Mm-hmm.
And we know who she is as a character from the beginning, as opposed to it being gradually revealed to us. Seeing if that puts a new light on the rest of the story.
All right. And Barrett, what do you got?
Yeah, I like this movie probably more now that we talked about it than before. I thought it was very enjoyable. I thought the main actress was awesome. Yeah, it's good. Worth seeing.
All right, sounds good. Yeah, for me, it was decent. I don't think anything's changed, but I did enjoy the conversation about the film because a lot of times, even bad films or good films or films that are just okay, like I feel this one is, some of our conversations turn out to be pretty good because we talk about a lot of things that we were thinking about and trying to verify what the writer and director and producers and screenwriters and all that were trying to say. Yeah, it's decent enough. And I'll go with Mike earlier, which is I wouldn't necessarily recommend it to everybody because it is probably for a specific type of audience, but it may be worth checking out, especially if you liked what we had to say about it. All right, so that's our discussion on Monolith as of February 29th, 2024. Not another leap year for another 4 years, so amazing itself that we are recording today. But either way, the film's available wherever, at least on February 29th, 2024, wherever you rent or purchase films, specifically at least in the United States, though I believe it is probably that way in most countries anyway. And you can check it out. And that's pretty much it. So with all that stated, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right. Thank you for listening to this sometime after February 29th, 2024, which is a leap year, in case you didn't know, because nobody's mentioned it. Thanks for listening to Monolith. Come back next time. We'll have another topic.
What genius decided to make election year one day longer?